Welcome to the Product Podcast, brought to you by Product School. Here, you'll get fresh insight from the people at the very top of the tech companies who make the products we love. Remember, you can learn product management live online. Visit productschool.com to discover our new certificate path. There, you can also join the world's largest community of PMs and network with the leaders from these podcasts at our online events. There's something happening almost every day.
Hey, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Carlos, and I'm the founder and CEO of Product School. Today, I have on the show a very special guest. Her name is Christine Iruaru, and she's the Director of Product Ops at Pendo.
Hello, Carlos. Good to see you again.
Good to see you again. Thank you for joining us. I remember first time you participated in a Product School event was in 2018 when in-person conferences were a thing. And really awesome to have you. So thank you for joining us again.
Yeah, I'm super happy to be here. This is going to be fun.
Cool. So we're going to talk about all things product, product ops, product-led growth. I think there's, you know, when we started in product, there was just one thing called product management, maybe, and still some people confuse that with project management. And now we're seeing the decentralization of product and so many different options, which I think is a good thing. Mm-hmm. So why don't we start with your personal story? How did you get started?
Sure. I love telling this story because it's one of those things that makes me that reminds me that things are meant to be. And so I am a native New Yorker, now live in Raleigh, been here for almost 3 years. And I got my degree in marketing with a concentration in finance from St. John's University in Queens, New York. I always figured that finance was the right thing to do. Being a New Yorker, that's where the money is, that's where the excitement is. But I was like, I kind of do like marketing a little bit more. And I followed more of the marketing path and didn't really end up liking it. And then I didn't think or remember much about my finance concentration. And a girlfriend of mine said to me, hey, do you want to come and work at Jefferies, which is this investment bank, Wall Street firm? And so I was like, sure, except, you know, don't have much experience there. And she's like, well, your marketing asset is what we need. Like, you as an asset in marketing is going to be great. So product marketing enablement, that sort of thing. And so I took the job, and it was for an internal proprietary system that the team was building at the time. And I loved it, and it was so fun. And about a month in, I was training a user over in our London office, and he was so frustrated with this just this widget on the dashboard that, you know, should have gotten him what he needed, but it was an early, you know, just an early version of the feature, as we do in product. We didn't have product managers at the time, and our boss is building everything. And I sat with him and I saw the frustration, and I was so compelled to just go back to my room and just like draw up what I thought he would want or what I thought would solve what this guy was looking for. And we put it together and flipped it to prod the next day. And he was just like so excited. And that was my moment of, what is this that I just did? This is not marketing. This is really cool. And so my boss was like, you just did product management, and I didn't know what it was. And he was like, do you want to do more of it? And I said, absolutely. And so my manager and I, we just decided, hey, why not, you know, just dive into this discipline and try to build it out. And that's how I got started. So by the time my time was up over at Jefferies, I was owning much of what was going on in the product team and partnering really closely with our head of engineering and just really crafting something for that company that was helping the business run really efficiently. So that was my happy accident, and I haven't looked back since then. So, yeah.
So when you said that you decided to take care of building that widget, what tools did you use at that time?
A napkin, Carlos. I went back to my hotel room after that day, and I felt this pain from him, and I was like, oh, we have to do something, and it seems so simple, and I just put a little sketch on a napkin and took it to my boss the next morning. And then that was it. He was like, I think we could do this. And we did. And that was it. So the tool, I mean, if you don't have to have something fancy, like that was just the most valuable thing to him. And then we ended up pushing it out to the masses, right? So all of our equity research analysts were leaning on that. It was really great.
That's really cool to hear because of course now there are many more tools and options out there, but it's not about the tools sometimes, it's just about, yes, that creativity and being resourceful to get something done no matter how or what. So, you know, I'm based in San Francisco, and my story is almost the opposite. I come from an engineering background, and this is when people said that in order to be a product manager, you have to know how to code. Obviously, that's a myth now. But I'm curious to hear from your perspective in New York. Did that become a thing, like for people in finance to now start getting more into product? Have you seen a trend there, or were you kind of the outlier?
Back then, I was an outlier. Today, I'm seeing a rise in product management in the discipline, either through the words product manager, product analyst. I don't know. I saw another one last week that was really interesting. And I was like, well, I was listening to this person articulate what they do. And I was like, that's a product manager role. But he's like, yeah, that's not what our company calls it. So I see it transitioning more over to having product management be a core focus of a company. But yeah, I would say back then when I started, it was almost 10 years ago. It was definitely niche. And I think the big thing for me was, how do I learn the business side as much as I need to in order to drive success? But today, I think we're seeing a lot more, how much of the tech side do I need to know in order to drive success? So that's an interesting shift. And I think we're finding in industries such as fintech and healthcare, education now, that having that SME experience is just as valuable, probably even more valuable depending on the product and the years the product has been in service, for someone to be really successful in helping their business drive outcomes versus having that technical experience.
So how did you educate yourself on the areas of product management that you didn't have much experience?
We spent a lot of time just digging into what some of the like West Coast Silicon Valley companies were doing. It was really early days for us. And when we started looking at product management, we realized it's been around for a really long time. Let's call it like the 70s in its core formation. But we started to try to find something that would work for a finance company that would fit sort of like a fintech mold. So we had to kind of craft our own. And I think that's something that's really important too for product teams and product managers, is there's no one size fits all model that's going to help your business succeed. So, leaning into core product principles, solving pain, measurement, tracking KPIs, all of those things are necessary. But the translation of that business to business is going to shift, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and I like what you mentioned at the beginning of being a subject matter expert, especially for people who are trying to break into product. If they don't have the official title, they need to know something. The recruiter needs to know what type of value you will add right away. And looking at industries where you have some experience, even if it's in a different role, can move the needle.
Yeah. I mean, I know people now who did not have any product experience, come from different backgrounds, like engineering, for example, as you said, yours is, and they just feel passionate enough about the customer set that they want to serve, that they feel like driving the outcomes for the customers is enough for them to get them started. And that's really interesting, because that helps them move. In my opinion, it helps you move a whole lot faster when you have that domain expertise or the passion for driving the results for the customer.
So I'm curious now to learn more about your own personal growth, because I understand how you broke into product from more of a finance and marketing background. And now you are at a company that is building products for product people across many industries, right? So that's very meta. They're building products for product people. So how do you make that full transition now to really a high-tech company?
Oh, yeah. I'm a firm believer. Again, like everything happens for a reason and everything's meant to be. And so when I left Jefferies, I went over to another company that was more fintech focused and served external customers. So my primary role in product management was our internal user base. And I shifted over to serving close to 50 customers in the finance space. And I was finding that as much as I love doing the product side, or as much as I love doing what I was doing, building teams, management, I absolutely love being a manager. I wasn't as thrilled about what it is that I was putting out there to the world. Meaning, it didn't speak to me as a product person. Like, okay, this is something that's thrilling me in terms of a product. It was exciting in terms of the outcomes it was driving for my customer, which is really great. But the subject itself in finance was not to me. And that's interesting because I took that concentration in finance because I said, this is the way I'm going to need to go in order to succeed. And so what I found more and more was that my management position kept consistent. And the one thing that I kept leaning into was how to drive really good outcomes for our customer and lean into the pain. And so that just is core to product, I think. And what was going on was I didn't feel like I was solving enough of that pain. And when the opportunity presented itself at Pendo to move into an organization that is truly maniacally focused on our customer and driving business outcomes on top of it, I jumped at the chance because I knew that there were passionate people working on a product that was meant for people like me who were trying to lean into that data to solve pain for customers. So it was a no-brainer, I think. You're right. It's very meta. And I think that's what makes it super exciting. And everyone that we talk to asks that question. It's like, what does it feel like to work for a product company that serves product managers? And the cool thing is our internal people, when they start and they go through onboarding, that's the first thing I suggest to them, which is like, you're selling to the people that are building the product that you're selling. The best thing you can do is sit down and spend some time with our team and product and understand what you're doing. So, I don't know. I don't know if there's any other way to explain that, like, when you find your heart and product and you find the place that you can do it, it's like the pieces align and you just, you know.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's a privilege that you can be the user of your own product as well. That's not always the case, right? I know PMs who are working on car insurance products and they don't have a car. Yeah. And it's not required that you have the user, but if you can actually find an opportunity where you can feel so connected with the user because it's solving part of your own pain points, I think that has an additional layer of motivation.
Yeah, absolutely.
So we've seen now like the entire evolution of product. Now it's not a secret anymore, and especially in companies that build product people, obviously there's a lot of respect for this type of role, but I've seen now that, you know, a lot of people think that product is just product management. So in your own experience, what are other roles that are part of the product team?
Oh, yeah. Well, personally, I mean, we kicked off product operations here at Pendo a year ago now. And so that is now a core part of our business, not just a part of the product team. And in our product team, we also have product design. And I also see this, you know, this is like controversial because some companies see product marketing belonging to product or belonging to marketing. Our product marketing team sits with marketing, but we are attached at the hip. And so I think that what ends up happening is product is sort of this nucleus and we just keep going out a little bit further and further from the center and everything we touch has a ripple effect. And so touching product marketing ends up touching our sales team, ends up touching our customers. And so I think that that's really interesting, but you know, core to Pendo, we have three disciplines that sit within the product team itself. I don't think that a product manager's role is to solely sit in the product management space. I think the one of the things that makes PMs really successful is the ability to influence and to sell their story, especially when they need to get buy-in to execute. And that's buy-in both from stakeholders and it's buy-in from engineering. And so having that close alignment with your engineering partners is really critical. But it's also important to have that close partnership and relationship with your customers. So you are just as customer-facing as a salesperson without the quota, is what I think. You're responsible for selling that product, but you're also responsible for being really empathetic and understanding what it is that's going on in that person's mind. Because they know it's all a part of the sale. But a product manager, in my experience, is received differently by a customer. And a lot of people agree with that I've spoken to recently. And I think that that's something that a lot of people should be leaning more into is how do you use your customer-facing role to help you build better and help you grow your business.
I think that's a great point. I like to talk about product mindset and make it part of an entire culture of the company. You don't need to carry a title in order to care about the product that your company is building or serving to users. So in your particular case, at Product Ops, you're also another first mover, right? Like you kind of broke into product by drawing something in a napkin, and now you are also doing Product Ops. So can you tell us a little bit more about what that exactly is and how it differs from traditional product management?
Yeah. I look at Product Ops as the team that's executing on the non-features that's necessary to make a business successful. And so my team is focused heavily on making sure that all of our internal parties are aligned. So we our charter at Pendo is align and empower. And that's from our success team to our sales team to product marketing and to product management and even to finance and general operations, because those folks need to know what we're doing and how we're executing, what it eats into for resourcing that's going to impact the business. And so my team focuses heavily on making sure that we are empowering our internal people with all the things that are coming up. What are the strengths that they can speak to? Partnering with product marketing and how they position that to our sales team, so our sales team knows how to position that externally. We also are responsible for all of the technical documentation and knowledge base assets that you see outside. And so, our Pendo is a product where you can do a lot of learning within the product because we have the guides capability. But beyond that, there's this world of how do we continuously allow our users to lean into everything that we offer. And so we recently brought on a tech writer who's owning all of that and offering up content in moments of need. And these are things that PMs want to do, but don't have the time to do. And that's where the need really stemmed from was, how do we amplify what they are doing as a team and what they are doing as individual PMs and continue to also bring in data to them that's going to feed into their decision-making. So on the flip side, we always use sort of this, infinite loop to illustrate our team and what we do. On the flip side, we are responsible for understanding our customer base, understanding deals that we have coming up and what that looks like in terms of things that could set us ahead. And how do we give that back to our product team so they can take that into consideration? So our revenue team loves that because they feel that they have a seat at our table, on the product table. And that the moment someone said that to me a couple of months back was an aha moment for me, because it made me feel that product is just a part of the business that is meant to drive really solid outcomes. And that was something that people have fought so hard to prove. But having that revenue team member say to me, "We want a seat at your table," meant that they knew that they would be able to help drive that outcome because product is saying, "Let's do it."
Mm-hmm. It almost reminds me of back in the day when PMs, product managers used to do a lot of product marketing, and now there's a very clear delineation and companies that large enough, they have different roles. I'm glad to see that now we can also see other parts of product that they don't need to be always done by the exact same person.
Right.
Think about when I was an engineer, we called technical debt. It's almost a bunch of stuff that, people didn't want to do because everyone was focused on like the next big feature, whatever. And now having someone who can also have our back and is passionate about it and can empower things. So to pay respect to that, because I've made that mistake many times of then having to stop everything and going back to fix a bunch of things, and then it always takes more than expected. So, the more you can push in the same direction without having to leave some bodies in the way, I think it's good for everyone.
I love how you said having somebody who has your back, and I think that's definitely what if somebody's trying to get into prod ops, like that is one thing that you need to make sure that you are pushing with your product team, because it's a true partnership and a true, a true measure of success for you is making sure your PMs feel that you do have their back. But at the same time, making sure the revenue team understands that you also are there to amplify their voices on this side.
And on that note, I also want to talk about an important topic in general in tech, which is diversity and inclusion, but in particular in product. Obviously, we've seen that in engineering, still to this day, there's a very big discrepancy. Most of the engineering positions are still filled by men. I assume that in product, it's a bit better, but still not 50-50. So I want to hear your take on the current situation and what else we can do as an industry, but also individually to increase the diversity and inclusion in product.
Well, the first thing is just a really simple thing that just gets overlooked. And I think that it's just amplifying each other's voices. And so with all of the recent events in our country in particular, I think that the biggest thing that's come up for us is looking really deep within ourselves and seeing if we've actually taken the opportunity to amplify somebody else's voice. And people just often overlook that because they go, you know, they go about their day to day and they just forget, or they don't think that somebody may not feel comfortable speaking up because of the way that they may be perceived or they feel that they may be perceived. So, you know, for women in particular, I've seen a whole lot more around people saying, you know, check this out. Like, look at what she did and look at what her contribution is. Say her name, like all of the women who have contributed to many things over our history that we didn't even know about. And so just speaking up and amplifying success of another individual, whether they are, you know, person of color or female, it doesn't matter. I think that that's really important. And that's just a little thing, like I said, that just goes unnoticed. And so that's one. And the other thing too is making sure that you're looking for people early on that you want to grow without that bias lens. And there's an unconscious bias that a lot of people do have. And a lot of companies have been putting a lot of work into unconscious bias training that's lifted that uncomfortable feeling to the forefront, but it's necessary now. And so I'm seeing a whole lot more movement around university recruiting, bringing people who look like them to the universities, whether it's virtual or if they're able to do it in person today, so that younger people feel really comfortable saying, I want to approach that table. And that's, you know, I think back to when I was at St. John's, and that was definitely something that I was conscious of. I want to feel comfortable walking up to someone. And so the earlier we start, the better chance we have to grow that pipeline of diverse talent within organizations. And that's where the beauty happens, because the diverse perspectives really help companies see things differently and can drive some really great outcomes. I've seen some just, gosh, some risks that were taken, and they were taken because, okay, well, recently people want to include everyone at this point. And had they not been included, you know, that voice wouldn't have been heard and that risk wouldn't have been taken. And now I'm seeing some really great outcomes from them.
I really agree with you. And I like especially the last part that you said, because objectively, if you have a more diverse team, you can build better products, better outcomes for your customers. And trying to do that as an afterthought is almost what we were discussing about, the technical debt, right? Or the product debt. Trying to fix that now in hindsight, maybe it's not even possible, or if it does, it's just not as natural, it's not part of the culture. So I'm glad that, first of all, you are speaking up and sharing this, because those quick wins that maybe someone can implement tomorrow can make a big difference 5 years from now.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Very quick win, everybody who's watching. Just dig a little deeper. You know, a coworker of mine and I sat down and, you know, in the height of everything, and we said, if we can just be honest with ourselves, and we coach our teams to be honest with themselves, they will then trickle that out. Even there, if there's a small chance that 3 of 5 of my directs will do that, that means 3 of 5 of my directs will do that, and they will continue on that flow.
So I want to cover one last topic with you, which is also very hot, product-led or product-led growth, right? Like, we all hear this term, and I'm trying to figure out, is this a role? Like, are there like product-led growth managers? Is this just a cross-functional topic? What's your take on it?
Well, product-led growth is amazing. Yes, it's become sort of like a buzzword. Our CEO just wrote a book, amazing. So product-led organization. And so we're super proud of that. And a part of it is product ops. And so I think product-led to me right now means, you know, how are you growing organically within your own customer base through the experience in the product? And who are the people within your organization that you need to involve to make sure that effort is happening, right? There's the MQL, marketing qualified leads, where people are trying to push products through that method. And then now we have PQLs that are coming up. I think that at some stage, there's a synergy that needs to happen, not just from marketing and product, but also from your internal customer facing folks who know your customer base well enough to say, here's where things are strong and here's where we can lean into to drive a better experience and potentially expand in an account, for example. And it starts from the moment somebody opens up your application. And so product-led growth is something that people need to think about from day one. So proper onboarding is critical. And that means, again, it's not just one person at your organization focusing on it. It could be, you know, different departments making sure that different personas are covered at each touch point. It also then moves into when you're going into renewal, right? Making sure that that experience is consistent. So the bottom line for me is that I think a lot of people are trying to say, who's going to focus on the product-led growth of an organization? And I don't think that there's one person that is able to drive that success. There's probably one owner, but it's a combination of different departments really putting their heads together to figure out what that experience is with the current offering you have that's going to grow an account or potentially just expand within that user base.
I agree. And if you think about it, it just makes sense. I almost think, why didn't we do this earlier, right? Like, why were the marketing teams traditionally so disconnected from what users were using? And it was all about like just pushing leads and then somehow talking with them and then somehow someone paying, which is not the end user of the product. And now everything seems to be more integrated where the product is actually driving growth. And obviously, it's not just for marketing or for sales. Yeah. Everyone needs to have that same mindset.
Yeah. The product needs to speak for itself, but there's got to be a bunch of minds behind it that's helping people understand that value in really small ways. So again, one of the guys on my team mentions that moments of need thing. So you have to find those moments and agree as a unit, what are those moments that we want to make sure people see the real value and continue to drive that throughout the app.
Yeah, and part of it, I think it's also some organizations like yours that have a chief product officer, which is different from a chief marketing officer or a chief revenue officer. And I think having that recognition for what the product function is, and obviously in partnership with many others, empowers product teams to also use the product not just for one particular use case, but you know, holistically as the full experience for free users all the way down to users or customers that need to renew the product.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you for listening to the Product Podcast. If you like this episode, don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. For more product insights, head over to productschool.com.